Right, here's Monitor Now, and I'm your host, Joe Garagiola. Just ahead, we'll be hearing from lovable Henry Morgan, Monitor's expert on swimming upstream against the consensus. Right now, though, we have music by the carnival, Laya Ladaya. Message you'll appreciate if you're one of the 60 million plus Americans who own their own homes.
Hi, I'm Al Capp, and I've got a new hobby, coin collecting. My first coins are the ones I saved by insuring my home with a low-cost homeowner's policy from State Farm Fire and Casualty. Now, they may not be rare coins, but I don't care. I'm shooting for quantity, not quality.
For your car, your home, your life, and your health. State Farm is all you need to know about insurance.
Hey, remember that old saying that fools walk in where angels fear to tread? Well, Henry Morgan now, he's nobody's fool, but he's going to walk right into that buzzsaw of opinion about what is and what is not art. Good luck, Henry.
I really don't know if I've brought this up before, but if I have, here it is again. Art. A-R-T. Art. Modern art. I'm beginning to worry about me. I'm beginning to think I'm stupid. For example, there's a fellow, I think he was a Bulgarian, who got some cloth of some kind, and with the help of a few dozen people, spread the cloth over a small hill of rocks in Australia. That's all he did. He spread this white cloth around so that it covered the rocks. A work of art, he said. He created this thing. And now somebody's given him the money to do a larger work of art on a higher hill. Hold that thought. Next, I see in a national magazine another fella hooked together some hollow gourds with a rope and left them underwater off the island of Tobago. Nobody's ever seen it. He took a photograph. He says that's a creative work of art. Then I read where a rich New Yorker paid a fellow to go out into some desert in the West and draw a chalk line a half a mile long. And at the end of the chalk line, he lay down on the ground and had his picture taken. What the rich man got for his money was the photograph. Hold that thought. A few months ago, a guy dug a hole in the ground outside the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City, and after he had dug the hole, he filled it in. He said that's a work of art. And somebody connected with the museum agreed with him. Hold that thought. There's another little monkey who's digging a series of holes a few miles apart somewhere out west. Not in any pattern, mind you, just holes. You can only see them from an airplane. Somebody's paying him to do it. It's another work of art. And now I find out that today the artist isn't expected to communicate with anyone. It's enough, they tell me, that he's expressing himself. And art is whatever he says it is, whether you like it or not. Isn't it wonderful? This is the now generation. If some goofball makes a mud pie, that's it, and I'm just a stupid man who's against progress. This is Henry Morgan, a name I made up, but is it art?
Sure, your name's art, Henry. I saw it in some graffiti the other day. I'm not going to tell you what they said, but it had to be art. It was on a museum wall. Hold that thought. You have a friend in the city. I just wish you'd have told me what city. Time right now, 17 minutes after the hour, and you're on the Monitor Beacon.
When Mrs. Greenfield sold her thriving dress business, she looked forward to just taking life easy for once. But boredom and loneliness set in faster than she expected. What she needed was to do something important. So she became a hospital volunteer worker. 3 times a week for 10 years, she has served in the hospital's pharmacy and found that a whole new world opened up. And since her husband has died, she has found her volunteer service more important than ever. She's needed, really needed. She's doing something to help another person. She's doing something she enjoys and which gives her great satisfaction. It is a whole new world. Become part of it. Become a hospital volunteer. Call the United Hospital Fund for information. And while you're on the phone, ask about the fund's free volunteer courses. The day or evening general introductory session will acquaint you with the hospital world. For people who like books, there's a patient's library course. Both sessions begin soon. So call the United Hospital Fund right away.
WNBC, New York.
Monitor continues with music by Liza Minnelli. It's her latest, Wherefore and Why, which she sings for us right here and now.
When I woke this morning, something inside of me told me that this must be my day. I saw the morning train, I felt the wind change. Too many times I'm on my way. Sunshine, what can you show me? What can you take me to make me understand? The wind can shake me, brothers forsake me. The rain can touch me, but can I touch the rain? I saw the sunrise above a cotton sky, just like a candy cane delight. I saw the milkman.
Report on student opinion from Monitor's College Poll. Today, Dean Mell reports on a special campus survey dealing with America's role in the space age and how much priority it should be given in relation to other programs.
Most of America's 7 million collegians were in grammar school when the first Sputnik electrified the world. They have grown up with the nation's space programs, Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo. The college poll wondered what their attitudes were toward further space exploration and what priorities they would put upon further conquest of the universe. The college poll study showed that most students believe there is life in space and that there is a reasonable expectation of discovering its location during their lifetime. But students also feel no sense of urgency in finding it. The campus consensus, according to the college poll interviews, shows we have spent sufficient dollars on space development programs and that students would reject another land a man on the moon type program for the 70s or 80s. Some college students object to pushing any space programs until our environmental problems are solved. Students generally reject the notion of a space race with Russia. In fact, 8 out of 10 students would support a joint space effort, in which the United States, Russia, and all other major powers would pool manpower and resources to explore the heavens in the coming decades. Our college generation has adopted a matter-of-fact attitude toward space programs and space development. Space scientists and astronauts are not listed among this generation's heroes. Only John Glenn among the astronauts is listed among the 25 most admired living men among the present college generation.
few of the nation's students have indicated any career interest in space programs or allied fields. The College Poll study shows that today's college students don't look to the frontier of space, but to the frontiers of social programs and improving our environment on Earth. In this context, today's students seem to identify more with President Nixon's emphasis on improving our own environment than President Kennedy's call for great scientific feats to inspire the world. This is Dean Mell for Monitor.
Could be one of the few things that some parents agree with their kids about, that outer space can wait until we solve some of our problems right here on Earth.
Well, I'm traveling down life's highway and things are going my way. I'm happy as a lark and fancy free. There's good reason why, my friend, my heart's singing each weekend. I spend time with Monitor and NBC.
Train's late again.
Yeah. Hey, what's in the package? Looks heavy.
Oh, a bust of me. Gonna send it to my girl in Peoria for Valentine's Day.
That'll cost a fortune. You should send an FTD love bundle instead.
Love bundle?
Yeah. A special florist's trans-world delivery arrangement. It's made to last, so you can have it delivered right now and turn Valentine's Day into Valentine's Week.
But she lives in Peoria.
So does an FTD florist. They're everywhere, and everyone is a real pro. Just get in touch with one right here in town. But do it early, because the love bundle will last right through Valentine's Day. Then you can relax and find somebody to take that crazy statue off your hands.
Your love should be there even when you can't. Call or visit an FTD florist. Ask for the love bundle and tell him to send it the FTD way.
This is not just a statue. It's a... it's a bust.
Wouldn't want this weekend to pass without wishing everybody a happy Chinese New Year. Now, this past year was the year of the chicken. The year ahead is the year of the dog. And since they both started with income tax time, which name you think is most appropriate? I'll tell you, with income tax, I always get the feeling that it shouldn't happen to a dog.
Stay right here on NBC.
And now, Monitor Sports. And after a six-second pause for switching, we'll have a report from the Bob Hope Desert Classic at Palm Desert, California.
This is Frank Dill, and we have a new leader, Bruce Devlin of Australia. Red hot on the back nine, has birdied 11, 13, 15, and 16, and is now 21 under par for the tournament. He has a four-stroke lead over Larry Ziegler, who birdied 11, but then bogeyed 12 and 16, and is now 17 under, four shots off the pace. In third place at 14 under, young Larry Henson. Arnold Palmer is in fourth place at 12 under through 15 holes, and Gene Littler is 11 under in the clubhouse. As Littler walked off the 18th green, I talked with him.
Gene, congratulations. The finest round of the day so far, a 66, and it seems to me the pin placements were kind of tough today.
Well, there were a few tough ones. They put them, for the most part, in the back of the greens, and it's pretty tough to try to get back there, especially when you take a chance of knocking it over. And if you do that, why, trying to get four, you'd be very apt to make a couple of double bogeys. So they were a little tough to get to, but the day was just absolutely perfect, and the golf course is in great shape. The greens were good, and there'll be some good scores today, even with the pins.
You had four straight birdies at one point on the front nine, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I birdied, let's see, four, five, six, and seven, and whipped out at eight and had about a four-footer at nine.
Wow.
So it's possible I could have had six in a row. But I was very pleased. This is the first day that I've made any putts, and I was pleased to see a few of those go in.
Gene, tell me something about the 18th. With the gallery ringing it the way it is and the stands up close to the back of the green where the pin is, you might as well just let it fly there, huh?
Well, I would say if I had a one-shot lead, I'd try to kind of play in there strong and low. There's no way you could knock it very far over the green.
Gene, thank you very much, and congratulations. A fine round.
Well, thank you. Nice talking to you.
Gene Littler, at this moment tied for fifth place. I repeat, our leader is Bruce Devlin, who apparently has the Bob Hope Desert Classic all wrapped up. He has a four-stroke lead with only one hole to play as Larry Ziegler has faltered in the final nine holes. Now in 6 seconds, we switch to Joe Garagiola in New York. This is Frank Dill for Monitor Sports.
Our thanks to Frank Dill and our final report on the spot on the progress of the Bob Hope Desert Classic later today on Monitor. Guitar Flower, Harlow Wilcox and the orchestra on Cross Country Monitor, the home of easy weekend listening. In the Seattle area of the Pacific Northwest, our friends follow the action on station KING. This is Joe Garagiola, and I'll be back in a moment. Garagiola here for Monitor 70, and ahead some pre-Valentine observations on love and marriage by psychologist Dr. Joyce Brothers. We're about it after a bit of music by Bossarillo. This number is Blackbird.
Blackbird singing in a dead of night, take this broken angel to fly all alive. Blackbird singing in the dead of night, take this second mind to learn to sing all alive. You were only waiting for this moment to be free. To learn to sing all alone. You were
Consider yourself romantic, an affectionate companion to your wife, still glowing with that flame of love that you had for her as a newlywed? Well, my friend, if you answered yes and you're middle class, middle-aged, and reasonably well-off financially, you better get ready to defend yourself. That's right, defend yourself. And for the reason why, listen to our nationally known psychologist and syndicated columnist, Dr. Joyce Brothers.
Once upon a time, husbands complained because their wives were frigid. Now, at least in the middle years, it's the wives who are doing the complaining about their husbands. And with justification, says California's Dr. Ralph Greenson. The Beverly Hills psychiatrist claims that the affluent, middle-class, middle-aged male has become romantically apathetic. For the most part, he has done it deliberately. In his mid-40s or early 50s, many management or middle management husbands decide they must protect their bodies from undue stress and strain. And how do they go about this? Not by giving up work or golf, but rather by giving up marital relations. It's not rare to find men who act in bed as if the sexual act is a dangerous obligation, contracted when they were young and foolhardy, Dr. Greenson declares. So, when possible, they avoid the bedroom, and instead of devoting themselves to their wives, they devote themselves to stamp or coin collecting and to food and drink. The latter only compounds the trouble, for overweight and overindulgence in alcohol are important reasons for male apathy and incapacity in the middle years. So say St. Louis researchers William Masters and Virginia Johnson. Many a 50-year-old has discovered that his ardor increased when the doctor ordered him to decrease the size of his dinners and the number of cocktails that preceded them. Masters and Johnson have also shown that it's the men who make love regularly who make love longest. The ones who save themselves in the middle years are rewarded with incapacity in the later decades. Those whose love life is continuous continue it into the 70s and even the 80s. And what of women in the middle years? They become romantic aggressors, Dr. Greenson complains. They reach their erotic peak later than a man does and maintain it right through the menopause. So as her husband grows more apathetic, the middle-aged wife becomes more and more aggressive. The reason for both unfortunate behavior patterns, Dr. Greenson believes, is that both husband and wife have divorced the physical act of lovemaking from emotional involvement. Loving, he says, is risk-taking. Once you commit yourself to loving another, you become vulnerable. You can get hurt. But you can also enhance your marriage and your marital relations by making both an expression and renewal of love. This is Dr. Joyce Brothers for Monitor.
Okay, lovers of America, I made some notes. Husbands grow apathetic. Love is a risky thing. It is if it's not your wife. I want equal time, and I need some ideas. Guys, you're going to help me, or you're just going to sit there? Let's go get her. All right, listen to this word now from American Motors.
Every year, we at American Motors hold a red, white, and blue sale, and this year, we're holding one, too. But this year, we did something different. We built special Rebels, Javelins, and Ambassadors, with options like power steering, power brakes, a V8 engine, and automatic transmission, and even vinyl tops and corduroy interiors. But that's not all we did. We list-priced every sale model at $300 less than comparably equipped non-sale models. But prices at your American Motors dealer aren't high to begin with, so imagine what they must be now.
Here's Monitor Music now. Mary Hopkins with her latest, a song about Tama Harbor. I don't know where it is, but the tune has a bossa nova beat, so I guess it must be near White Plains.
In a giant lemon tree, alone my friend and me, both climbed down and crossed the sand until we reached the sea. And the waves come high, high as we sway and dive. And the way I feel makes me want to take a chance.
She's changed her style considerably since her first record when she did that old-style rendition of Those Were the Days. A new development on Broadway just ahead, so stay tuned. You're on the Monitor Beacon.
This is Ben Grauer. I've just edited an unusual book, a permanent record of the tumultuous months from mid-1968 through mid-1969. The Chicago Convention, Russia invades Czechoslovakia, De Gaulle steps down, Jets beat Colts, and man reaches the moon. It's all in the NBC News Picture Book of the Year, 1969. Nearly 300 pages, 400 photographs, special articles by NBC correspondents overseas, and by art, theater, film, and literary critics, with a prophetic foreword by historian Henry Steele Commager. The NBC News Picture Book of the Year is $10 alone, but while they last, you can get both the 1969 yearbook and the 68 yearbook, a $20 value, for only $11, including tax. To get both these big books, mail your check or money order for $11 to Yearbooks, Box 14, New York 10019. That's Yearbooks, Box 14, New York 10019.
WNBC, New York.
This is Joe Garagiola with more of Monitor 70. One of the traditions of the theater is the running fight between critics on the one side and producers and playwrights on the other. Well, today we hear how one Broadway producer tried to break that tradition. We hear it from our man on the aisle, Leonard Probst.
Do the critics have a stranglehold on the theater? And if they do, can that stranglehold be broken? That's the test that was decided this week on Broadway when a producer brought in a new comedy. It's called Paris is Out. It deals with a late middle-aged couple planning a trip to Europe. Originally, it was advertised as the first play to break the power of the critics. There were to be no previews before opening night. There would be no opening night, and the critics were not to be invited to see the play. Traditionally, the way opening nights work is by gentlemen's agreement. At the decision of the producers, we critics agree not to see a show until the producer says it's ready. But if there's no gentleman, there's no gentleman's agreement. In the case of Paris is Out, since there was to be no official opening night, a couple of reviewers bought their own tickets, went to see it, and panned it. Well, that changed things quickly. The producer then sent us telegrams saying the play would have an official opening night, and the last line of the telegram read, "Thank you for waiting to see the show until the director felt it was ready." As for critics having a stranglehold on the theater, it depends on the show. When the public wants to see something, such as Coco, it's a hit no matter what we critics say. I, along with many other critics, didn't like Coco, but the people, quite rightly, went to see Katharine Hepburn, and so Coco is a box office hit. It's only when the public doesn't care that the critics have power. As for Paris is Out, the producer got the last laugh. He lost his fight, but he won free publicity. Panning the critics is good sport for everybody except the critics. But those of us who throw brickbats have got to be able to receive them when it's our turn. As for myself, I'm sticking by the producer's original request. I'm going to do as he asked. I'm not going to review Paris is Out. And so there. Leonard Probst, NBC News New York, and that's it from Broadway.
So there. That's your answer, huh, Leonard? Okay. I still don't know who won, the producer, the critics, or the theater going public. Maybe we won't know the answer for a while. So there.
Hi, this is Jonathan Winters with Marty Frickert for AMF.
Hi, Bowlers. This is Marty Frickert, the girl with the beautiful pins. Talking about a special offer from AMF, the bowling folks. The offer is a 4-foot-tall inflatable bowling pin. Knock it down, it pops right up again. And a giant 30-inch inflatable bowling ball. Talk about big. Wow. They're worth $5.50 each. You get them for just $2 each with the AMF 350 bonus certificate you get when you buy any AMF bowling bag, shoes, or ball, including the bigger Dick Weber All-Pro model.
These inflatables make great toys for the kiddies, or room decorations, or bowling prizes.
Right, Sonny. So to find out where you can get the AMF 350 bonus certificate, phone Plaza 7... Oops, sorry, that's my number. Phone 800-243-6000. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S.
That's 800-243-6000.
If a man answers, hang on.
Here's Rolf Harris with a song about two little boys.
Two little boys had two little toys. Each had a wooden horse. Gaily they played each summer's day. Warriors both, of course. One little chap then had a mishap. Broke off his horse's head. Wept for his toy, then cried with joy, as his young playmate said, "Did you think I would leave you crying when there's room on my horse for two? Climb up here, Jack, and don't be crying. I can go just as fast with two. When we grow up, we'll both be soldiers, and our horses will not be toys. And I wonder if we'll remember when we were two little boys." Long years passed, war came so fast, bravely they marched away. cannon roared loud, and in the mad crowd, wounded and dying lay. Up goes a shout, a horse dashes out, out from the ranks so blue. Gallops away to where Joe lay, then came a voice he knew. Did you think I would leave you dying when there's room on my horse for two? Climb up here, Joe will soon be flying. I can go just as fast with two. Did you say, Joe, I'm all a tremble? Perhaps it's the battle's noise, but I think it's that I remember when we were two little boys. Did you think I would leave you dying? There's room on my horse for two. I'm up here, Joe will soon be flying back to the ranks so blue. Can you feel, Joe, I'm all a tremble? Perhaps it's the battle's noise, but I think it's that I remember when we were two little boys.
6 hundredths of a second to separate American from world ski title. Rod Laver takes Philadelphia tennis crown and Turbill named Davis Cup captain. Now the stories behind those headlines on Monitor Sports. France finished 1-2 and Billy Kidd of the United States third today in the men's special slalom, the first final in the World Alpine Ski Championships at Val Gardena, Italy. The winner was Jean-Noël Auxerre, who flashed down the course twice for a total elapsed time of 1 minute 39 and 47 one-hundredth seconds. That was only 4 hundredths of a second faster than runner-up Patrick Roussel and 6 hundredths better than Kidd, who was angry with his time and place. Kidd said, "To be beaten by such a small margin really makes me mad. I could have gone faster in the first heat, but decided to play it safe." As for the other American entries, Spider Sabich and Steve Lathrop fell in the second heat. Bob Cochran took a spill in the first. Rod Laver of Australia won the $60,000 Philadelphia International Open Tennis Tournament today. He defeated fellow Aussie Tony Roche 6-3, 7-6, and 6-2, taking the second set under the unique tie-breaking game scoring system. The United States has a new Davis Cup captain today, Edward A. Turbill, an attorney from St. Petersburg, Florida. Turbill was president of the U.S. LTA in 1962 and 63, and one of the earliest advocates of open tennis. Former Philadelphia Eagle Pete Pihos and three others were named this week to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Reporter Wayne Lemon recorded the Pihos reaction.
Yes, Wayne, this honor that I've received is probably the greatest honor a pro football player can receive. And it has been a lot of hard work, 9 years of it, but I feel that I'm in great company being inducted into the Hall of Fame, especially with three other fellows that are going in with me. They're pretty great football players.
Pete, you played both ways with the Eagles after coming out of the University of Indiana. Which did you enjoy playing most, the offense or the defense?
I enjoyed playing the offense. It was a lot more fun and a lot more of a thrill, you know, catching passes on key situations or scoring touchdowns. Offense is a lot more fun than defense.
Pete Pihos, who, along with Hugh McElhenney, Jack Christensen, and Tom Fears, will become number 63, 64, 65, and 66 members of Professional Football's Hall of Fame. This is Wayne Lemon for Monitor Sports.
And in the Bob Hope Desert Classic, Bruce Devlin is the winner, the first prize worth some $25,000. Devlin the winner in the Bob Hope Desert Classic, which was carried on NBC. You heard reports throughout the afternoon right here on Monitor. In the National Basketball Association, Atlanta 142, Chicago 137. That's the completion of the November 6th disputed game that ended in a 124-all tie. In the regularly scheduled game, it was Chicago on top, 117-107. Baltimore 120, Milwaukee 106. Boston 130, Cincinnati 117. Royals played without their injured star, Oscar Robertson. In the ABA, the New York Nets defeated Carolina 95-88. Indiana beat Kentucky 109-107 in overtime. And in the National Hockey League, Philadelphia 5, Detroit 3, Gordie Howe scored his 750 career goal for the Red Wings. And a repeat, Bruce Devlin, the winner of the Bob Hope Desert Classic. And that's a look at sports. You a new one by Al Hurt and the orchestra. You've been listening to Monitor 70, and it's time right now to catch up on what's happening in the world.
News time is coming up now. Ba, 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 ba. Ba, 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 Monitor Radio.
And this is your host, Joe Garagiola, inviting you to stay tuned.
Radio.